With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The World Cricket Show is
too much emphasis on world.
The World Cricket Show is proudly supported by Newbury Cricket, quality bat makers since 1919.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Hello and welcome to the World Cricket Show, the world's favourite cricket show. My name is Adam Bayfield and I'm presumably why you've tuned in. And making up the numbers is Tony Kerr.
Afternoon.
Tony, where are we?
That's a good question. Well, it's a different location to our usual recording spot.
We're not in our usual studio, that would be fair to say.
No, inspired by our experience in the Caribbean, if you've been listening to the show for a month or around a couple of months or longer, we were treated to a pretty spectacular backdrop for our West Indies tour special. So anyway, in the spirit of that, and realizing that we don't need to sit in a sweaty room surrounded by my underwear, we have brought it to one of, if not probably the iconic Guernsey beach, Cobo Beach.
The iconic Guernsey beach. Yeah, that's probably an accurate statement. I mean, we're not surrounded by mountains of your underwear, but you are just sat here in your underwear, so yeah. Still got some of the same vibe. But it is nice to get out of your spare room, your box room, and get out into the great outdoors, onto the beach, as you say. I think it's just that thing that, having been to the Caribbean, which is like, well, I'm not recording in your flat anymore. I've been spoiled by that.
I mean, the only thing we're lacking now is a nice glass of cold white wine, and I'm waiting for it to arrive. I presume you've sorted that.
Yeah, don't worry, mate. That's on the way.
Yeah, and I think this is the logical point to take the podcast, I think, ahead of what is promising to be a spectacular summer of cricket, and it feels like it's arrived today.
Summer is here, very much. We were saying just before we started recording that the next step, so currently we're on the beach, we spread a mat out. You're getting your sandy feet all over my mat, which I'm fighting hard not to say anything about. And we spread a mat out. We've got the equipment here. We're saying next step is to hire a producer or an intern, or just force one of our friends to follow us around holding the recording equipment, because then we can go and like paddle in the sea while we're recording the podcast. So that's the next step.
If we don't do that before the end of this World Cup or before the end of the Ashes series, then we'll have let ourselves down and you guys.
Yeah, the listeners will be the ones to really miss out if we don't do that. Well, it's been a while, Tone. It's been a month or so since the last episode, but we're back at the start of what is, as you say, an enormous summer of cricket. One of the biggest summers in English cricketing history, I think.
Huge.
It would be fair to say. We obviously got the Ashes coming up at the start of August. But before that, of course, the Cricket World Cup in England over the next little while. And it all kicks off next Thursday, the 30th of May, with the first match between England and South Africa at the Oval. Well, in a minute, we're going to go team by team through all the teams, our unnecessarily comprehensive team by team rundown. But here's my first question, Tone. How excited are you?
Pretty excited, I'd say. I don't want to be critical of anyone at the tournament. I don't know. We don't live in England. Obviously, we're in Guernsey.
As you've mentioned, we're on possibly Guernsey's most iconic beach.
Exactly.
At the moment.
The build-up, in terms of generating excitement, I'm not sure that, England launched their kit last night, and that was 9 days before the tournament. I mean, like, surely do it 6 weeks before the tournament or 2 months before the tournament. Likewise, the squads get named very close, closer than like a Football World Cup would be. So in a way, I guess it concentrates the excitement. But yeah, you don't really get the sense that there's a huge amount of anticipation in the country. I mean, there are other things going on, European elections and whatnot. Nigel Farage is kind of marching around getting doused in milkshakes.
Covered by milkshakes.
But I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. you know, maybe you know, as we approach the end of the you know, the business end of things, that, you know, and England, you know, by the looks of it, you think would be in the mix there, that you know, things would have reached fever pitch, but it's a slow burner at the moment.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you know, you say that they've only unveiled the kit sort of 9 days before, but is there not an argument that if they'd done it like 2 months before, that you risk the anticipation burning out? That, like, for example, the original squads, now I know England have like officially named their squad this week, it's like the finalised squads this week, but they originally named the squads the first week of April, and to me that was just like, well, what's the point of doing this?
So for you, too early.
It was too early, yeah. But I agree with you that it doesn't necessarily feel, you don't get the sense that there's like a real buzz of excitement in England at the moment. But then maybe once the tournament actually starts, it'll be different. And it's unfair to compare it to something like the Football World Cup or the Olympics, because, you know, they are just on a different level. And one of the reasons for that is something that is probably worth talking about. I mean, I you know, to answer my own question of how excited am I would say I have somewhat mixed feelings about it, because I mean, I'm a little bit wary of starting a World Cup preview with something negative, and we are kicking off on a bit of a negative note, you know, and I don't want to sort of burst anybody's balloon here, but I do have quite mixed feelings. I mean, on one level, I suppose it'd be strange if I wasn't excited, because I like cricket and there's going to be a lot of cricket over the next couple of months, and I'm certainly excited about England's chances of winning the thing, which we're going to talk about in a minute, but it does have to be said that the ICC don't make it easy for us to be excited. I mean, obviously, this is famously a 10-team tournament, which was extremely controversial. There's no Ireland, no Scotland, and that does take some of the novelty out of it, doesn't it? That it doesn't feel like this truly kind of special, unusual, global event. It's almost just another Champions Trophy. But more importantly for me, this format is just diabolically bad. Yet again, it's way too long, which the Cricket World Cup has always been. Not as bad as some previous iterations, but it's still 48 matches over 7 weeks. So it's one fewer match than last time, five fewer than 2003, but it's still far too many. So it's way too long, but also the way that those 48 games have been organised, are being arranged, is just terrible, I think. It's one massive group stage where everyone plays everyone. So actually, there's going to be 45 matches before we get to a knockout game. We could well be, you know, 30, 35 games in before any one match starts to feel like it means anything. Or, you know, where you start to really get a sense of who's in with a shout of qualifying for the semi-finals. And that, I mean, that's just ridiculous to me. I think if the two of us, Tom, were kind of brainstorming ideas for a cricket tournament, and we said, right, let's start with like the worst possible idea, let's come up, what would be the worst tournament, and we'll kind of work backwards from that, or work up from that, I think you'd get somewhere close to this.
I think you better get in the sea, you need to cool off, mate. I agree. I mean, you actually look at the fixes and you just think, I mean, there's almost no scope for probably three of the sides in the tournament not to get to the semi-finals. I would say the fourth spot should be competitive, up for grabs. Maybe that's a bit too strong, but I agree. You know, we've spoken about it at length. I guess it's the fate has been sealed. But you know, at the very least, the full ICC members should all be there. At the very least, and you know, there are currently 16 teams in the ODI rankings. They should all be there. And you know, the ICC have been tinkering, haven't they? They've got a new qualification pathway for 2023, which we could talk about that another day probably, but yeah, I mean, the bottom line is there aren't enough teams, and it's and the teams that are there are playing too many matches.
Well, sorry to start off on a negative note, hopefully it's out of my system now, won't mention it again, but you know, I do feel like it may be disingenuous not to at least flag that up at the outset, that for all that I'm excited about England and I want to be excited about the Cricket World Cup, it's such a badly arranged, badly formatted tournament that it's hard, isn't it?
And exactly, you know, even the last two World Cups have come in for criticism from yourself.
yeah.
For their length and everything. But, you know, even at least with that, you had quarterfinals. So you had, seven knockout games. And because of the way the two groups were set up, I mean, I guess you had the super, I forget the super eights and all that, or super 12s, yeah, or whatever, yeah, it is, super unleaded.
Super Mario.
Yeah, exactly. You had, yeah, you had more clutch matches. As you say, how many genuine sort of clutch matches will there be in this tournament where things are decided by on a single day?
Yeah, where it's all on the line.
Yeah, it's going to be very few.
Well, as you say, and we're going to talk about them in a second, but it would be pretty extraordinary, you'd think, for England not to get out of the group, given their form. So we're excited about England in this tournament, but it could well be that there's only two matches that where it feels like something really matters that they're playing.
I mean, the flip side...
out of potentially 11.
The flip side of all that, as a sort of festival of cricket, you know, brilliant. You know, you've got, as you say, 45 matches being played around England over the space of 6 or 7 weeks.
48.
48 matches, sorry.
Get the facts right, Tone.
Let's put aside whether it's all to make money or not, but from a kind of getting people to the games and just enjoying cricket, you know, there's sort of unparalleled opportunities.
Yeah, and as I say, it's something that we should be excited about for sure. And, you know, if England win the tournament, I suspect we'll get over it. I suspect that won't be, the length and the format won't be the thing that we remember as England fans if England do win it. So let's talk about them a bit. So they announced, as you mentioned, their final 15-man squad on Tuesday. The big headlines there being that Jofra Archer is in there, ousting David Willey, and Liam Dawson recalled as well in place of Joe Denley. But what stole the show for me, Tone, was their new kit. You've mentioned it. You saw this kit.
Saw it.
Really cool.
Good work.
Retro, old school. Arguably the best thing the ECB have done for about 25 years.
Yeah, no, pretty nice. I think they launched it in a sort of warehouse in East London, by the looks of it, with the now ubiquitous Felix White hosting the event, I believe. And I did
You're
see
a bit sour tone that you weren't yeah, asked to do yeah. that.
Yeah, next year, next time. I mean, it was quite funny. I think I saw some content from Crick Info where the reporter was sort of asking the England players kind of how swaggy they feel in the new kit, and instead of just Owen Morgan and Joe Root trying to answer that question, it was quite amusing.
I feel like England should always play in sky blue. Sky blue for me over dark blue.
When you actually, and you should never read the comments, should you? But you know, some of the feedback though from people was like, "Oh, it's awful." You know, it should be in a darker blue. But you know, the real opinions are that it's a top kit, and that I will be getting one of those shirts.
Yeah, I actually really want one. Is it just like it's what you grew up with? So when we were young children, England played in sky blue. So that feels proper. Dark blue's always felt newfangled, but I guess for you know, younger people than us, perhaps the sky blue's not right. But they're wrong. It's been an extraordinary 4 years for England, hasn't it? The results have been remarkable. They haven't lost the bilateral series for 2.5 years now. Number one in the world, actually by a reasonable distance. But it's the way they've played, isn't it, that's been the truly astonishing thing. Big hitting, swashbuckling, fearless brand of cricket, dominant brand of cricket. When you chuck in the fact that they're at home, I mean, this almost goes without saying, really, doesn't it? But surely they've never had a better chance to win a World Cup than they do this time.
Absolutely not. And not even... It's such a different situation to anything previously, because what has come before wasn't even just like plucky, you know, good efforts. It was diabolical. Yeah. Let's put it that like frankly diabolical, and just so limp, so utterly limp.
2015 was one of the real low points in English cricket, wasn't it?
I mean, it is actually astonishing. It's got to be one of the biggest turnarounds. I don't know, in any sport of any kind, because for England to have been so far behind what seemed to be the trend, or you know, seemed to be the sort of you know the winning MO a few years ago, to now being like on a different planet to even the teams, India, Australia, who you'd think actually would be the one, or certainly, you know, India with the talent they've got, you know, would be the ones kind of setting the trend.
Yes, it's absolutely crazy, as you say, that they were in 2015, it just felt like they were decades behind, and now they're, as you say, they're setting the example for others to follow.
And actually, when you look back at 2015, though, that side, it's not huge, isn't it? It's not completely different, is it?
Well, Morgan was the captain.
Yeah. You know, you've basically added in Roy and Bairstow. I think that's about it. You know, Butler was there. Hales was there. But, you know, Hales, Wokes, as you say, Root, Morgan. But yeah, I mean, but there have been sort of key personnel introductions, haven't there? And you know, just that wholesale attitude change.
Yeah, and I suppose Bayliss would have to take a lot of the credit. And also, yes, if you look at that World Cup squad in 2015, there are a lot of similarities, but there had been some very late changes going in. You know, Morgan had only just been made the captain. It was Alistair Cook a few weeks before, and they were still playing in this kind of Cook fashion. But then, yeah, it hasn't changed that much. And that perhaps is illustrated by the fact that not only have they turned it around, but it hasn't been like a gradual four-year process of turning it around. The first series after the 2015 World Cup against New Zealand at home, they scored 400 and, you know, literally from then they've been playing this way and have been more or less this good. I've made this point in the podcast before. It's been an incredible 4 years, and whether or not they win the World Cup, like if they don't win the World Cup, it won't sort of render the last 4 years meaningless, or, you know, it's not like the end of Game of Thrones where it's just like, well, it's all been a waste of time then. But yes, they've really never had a better opportunity. By the way, I don't know if people can hear it. There's a plane just going over our head. There are quite a few other people on the beach as well. We're getting some very strange looks, Tone. I'm looking back up the beach. You're looking out to sea. But yeah, there's some. I think people are wondering what we're doing.
Well, what else would we be doing?
There's a couple of guys there with placards. Big World Cricket Show fans over there. We love you, Tony, that one says.
That's to be expected. That's why we record in private.
So I mentioned Jofra Archer is in the squad. Probably not a surprise at this point that he was named.
I think basically from his first sort of three balls of that first ODI that he played, that people were like, well, he's in.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think people knew that. I don't know how much you want to go into the whole rigmarole of what happened and all the stuff. Yeah, I mean, in many ways, it's been quite a tumultuous build-up for England, hasn't it, in the end, with Hales and the debate over whether to include Archer. For me, it's the right decision, for sure, but I did feel like some of the reaction to the debate around it was a bit misplaced, because the situation just didn't compare to other examples of players coming into the team. You know, I think, for example, had Archer qualified to play for England before the West Indies tour and had played those ODIs in the West Indies, there would have been absolutely no debate. It's just simply the fact that we were talking like a month before the tournament, that you know, no one had seen him play for England. And as you say, given it had been such a successful four-year period, there is an element of risk in that. You know, you judge by the reaction of Willie and Denley, who've missed out in the end. I mean, it's Willie more than Denley that you kind of feel for.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That is tough. And, that's a tough thing to deal with, having played a really significant part in getting there. But, you know, actually seeing the way that the England team seemingly have dealt with the Hales incident, you know, that it's quite business-minded, isn't it? I don't think there's too much, you know, obviously that I'm sure privately they'll be disappointed to lose a player who's been around the scene and you know, was a useful player, it seems like there's less risk now to that inclusion than there was before.
Well, it was sort of an impossible situation in some ways, because had they not picked him, you know, if they don't pick him and they don't win the World Cup, the narrative will be, well, if they'd picked Archer, they'd have won it. Having picked him, if they don't win the World Cup, there could be questions about, you know, did it destabilise the dressing room? So essentially, they've got to win the World Cup is the only way to solve that problem. But I absolutely think it's the right decision. I really don't think it's unreasonable to wonder if it would be destabilising, because they have had this incredible successful unit. If this had been, if he'd qualified, you know, in another universe, if he'd qualified to play for England just before the 2015 World Cup, there'd have been no debate, because England
would
have been desperate for anyone to come in and help them. But on the eve of this massive tournament that they've been building for successfully for 4 years, to change the squad, to change one sort of element of the squad, is undoubtedly a risk. And we're sort of alluding to Jonathan Liu's article, which I don't really want to get into, because just because we've had Johnny on the show a couple of times, and I feel like we should have him on to talk about it at some point if we're going to talk about it. But yeah, my personal view is that I don't think it's unreasonable to, I don't think it was unreasonable to have that concern, but it's definitely the right decision to pick him. And in some ways it would have been self-defeating to not, because he's such a good player. I mean, he's the box office bowler in the team. It's not like he's going to come in and be a squad player. He's the one that you want to watch bowl out of all those guys, isn't he? And that in itself tells you a lot, I think. And I think actually the selectors did it exactly the right way. They didn't name him in the original squad, but they gave him an opportunity to prove himself in the Pakistan ODIs. He came in and did well, and then they made the call. It's desperately harsh on David Willey, who's been brilliant for England over 4 years, but it is international sport. And, you know, I'd love to be playing cricket for England at the World Cup as well.
And you've had a good 4 years as well, to be fair.
I was really close. The only missing piece in the puzzle was talent. But aside from that...
Yeah, and also, given the fact that England are going to play 9 group games before they get to a knockout, there'll almost be a new team culture by the end of that anyway.
Well, and there's every chance that Willie will come in, because certainly given Mark Wood's track record and quite a few of the bowlers, that it's far from guaranteed that they're all going to make it to the end of the tournament. So, but I, you know, it just makes a lot of sense. If England do have a vulnerability, it is in the bowling. So Archer coming in does make a difference. Potentially, though, the bowlers don't have to do anything outrageous, because the England batsmen will back themselves to chase more or less anything, or post more or less anything. Can anyone live with England's batsmen, Tony? You've obviously got Roy and Bairstow at the top of the order, frightening proposition. Root at 3, Morgan's in blistering form at number 4. Then you've got Joss Butler. There's runs in the lower order as well. Yeah, it's quite a lineup.
I mean, my preview notes consist of a list of names, and England have got the most names under their heading for sure. I mean, yeah, as you said, you've got 6. Well, yeah, but in Bairstow and Butler, they've got the 2 most destructive batsmen at the moment.
Certainly opening batsmen, yeah.
Consistently destructive batsmen. Yeah, that's Bairstow and Butler.
Yeah, that's those two, you know. The two of the names written down.
And then Roy, I mean, Roy's arguably the best of them lot, and he's not even got the best record, but he's arguably the best of the lot. And then you throw in Morgan, as you say, and then you've got Root and Stokes, and then you've got the rest of the guys.
Butler.
You can chuck I said Butler.
All right.
Come on, mate.
Roy is a good player as well.
I mentioned Roy. Bairstow. Anyway, basically you've got 6 names there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's an almost unparalleled batting lineup, isn't it? Which is quite a scary thing to say as an England fan, because, like, how?
Yeah.
Where? Why? I mean, yeah, and that's it. I mean, yeah, we have seen the batsmen fail occasionally in the last 3 or 4 years, but, you know, in nine group games, you know, surely they might only fail once, in which case it's irrelevant. I mean, when it comes to the knockout games, you know, who knows? It will be tense, but
well, that's the question, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, they might fail once or even twice in the group stage, maybe even 3 times. But because of the way this tournament's set up, that might not make a difference. You would think that England's batting is good enough; it should fire 5, 6, 7 times, and that will be enough to get them through. But then it does come down to the semi-finals, and this is why. You know, for me, they're undoubtedly the favourites. I think they'd be the favourites anywhere in the world, but the fact it's in England, they are for sure the favourites. But it's not a foregone conclusion because, firstly, as you say, we have seen them. We have seen that they have a bit of a tendency to collapse in a heap occasionally, particularly if it's on a sticky pitch. Also, the pressure, you know, if it comes to the semi-finals and the final, they are going to be expected to win. So how do they deal with that pressure? Or you might get just a lightning performance from one or two individuals in the opposition. You know, if they come up against India and Kohli plays a Kohli innings, you know, maybe that's it. It's far from certain that they're going to win. Like, I think this team will win the majority, maybe even the vast majority of all matches that they play at this point. But they're not going to win every game. And when it does come down to the knockouts, anything can happen. And we saw that happen in the Champions Trophy, obviously, a couple of years ago. But I think it would be pretty staggering if they don't make it to the semi-finals.
I mean, it would be the biggest disappointment in English sport probably ever. I don't know.
That's a crowded field.
Yeah. No, exactly. The statistics are pretty staggering. It's like sort of 5 of the 6 highest totals since the last World Cup. Mm-hmm. The 2 highest totals ever, which is, when you consider where they come from, bonkers.
Well, as I say, they will feel they can chase anything, even if someone posts a world record score against them. They'll at least feel they're in with a chance. You know, you wouldn't rule them out. So, and that's pretty remarkable. We should probably talk about some other teams. I mentioned that we're sat on this mat here, which Tony is just gradually rubbing sand into with the soles of his feet. But it's we're kind of, the sand doesn't look wet, but the longer we sit here, the more my posterior is getting soaked from the sand underneath.
It's pretty damp.
So maybe we ought to speed this up, or it's going to get pretty ugly. If England are the favourites, Tone, are there obvious second favourites in your mind? Or does it become a bit packed lower down?
I'd be surprised. Well, yeah, I think India and Australia are the two next cabs off the rank.
That's interesting that you'd say Australia.
Yeah, I think so.
Let's talk about India first. Yeah, because I would have them as second favourites, clear second favourites.
Yeah, and I probably wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, India will get to the semi-finals surely as well. Almost certainly. You know, in Kohli, they've got the most accomplished batsman in the world at the moment. Whether with him and the players around them, they can match England on their day. I don't even know about that, which is again quite remarkable given you know how much Kohli has grown into this like just behemoth of a batsman who just seems capable of almost anything. I guess with Rohit and Shikhar Dhawan around him, as a batting lineup, India have obviously got what it takes, and in the bowling department, as we saw from them when they last toured England, they know what they're doing in those conditions now.
Bumrah, is one of the best bowlers in the tournament, isn't he?
Yes.
We've both got lists of names in front of us.
You're just getting ahead of me here.
Basically, you could boil this preview down to Tony saying Rohit, Shikhar Dhawan, I say Bumrah, and then we move on.
Yeah, just cut out the gaps. And you just get the sense with India as well, unlike England, England have got an atrocious record in the World Cups since the early days of one-day cricket. Or one day World Cups.
Well, since 92. So in all our experience of watching cricket, they've been abysmal.
In our conscious lifetime. Yeah. Whereas India obviously won semi recently. And as an outside observer, I don't know what the mentality is like in India around this kind of stuff, but you just feel like there's a confidence about this Indian team now that they'll be going and thinking they're favourites. I think.
And justifiably so, up to a point. If England weren't this good, then they would be favourites because this India team is formidable as well. And, you've mentioned your names. One other name that I'll throw in is Kuldeep Yadav, who obviously had a sensational sensational handful of white ball games in England last year. And England really struggled to work him out. They did eventually, but they found it difficult. And, so he'll be a big weapon as well. This is also an extremely good team, and if they come up against England in the final and Kohli does a Kohli, they will certainly back themselves. So,
by the way, how good a final would that be as well? I mean, that would be blockbuster.
So yeah, for me, definitely the second favourites. They on Sunday the 16th of June, they take on Pakistan, which is going to be a big old game, you would say. There's obviously been some doubt about whether it would even take place because of recent tensions, but it seems to be on. As for Pakistan, they're probably going to be a little bit battered and bruised after this 4-0 defeat in the warm-up series against England, but I don't think they played as badly in that series as that scoreline perhaps suggests. If you didn't watch the games and you just look at the scoreline, you think, oh, Pakistan got thrashed. They actually didn't. I think they played some pretty good cricket. They've got a very decent bowling attack, haven't they? But, there's not necessarily much that anyone can do, as we say, about England's batsmen at the moment. Before that series, you probably would have picked the batting as their weak point, as Pakistan's weak point. But they were actually really impressive against England. I think they posted 340 or more in 3 out of 4 completed innings and just shy of 300 in the other. And just to mention some names here, Fakhar Zaman, Imam Ul Haq and Babar Azam, all terrific players and all seem to be in form. I don't know, it's very difficult to say with Pakistan, isn't it? It's such a cliche that they're mercurial, that you never know what you're going to get, but that they can turn it on and often do it global tournaments. And obviously they won the Champions Trophy in England 2 years ago. The one thing I would say is that the nature of this format might work against them. You feel like they might be, for that kind of that Pakistan thing to happen where they suddenly switch it on and win out of nowhere, which they obviously did in England as well in 2009 in the World T20. You feel like that needs to be more of a kind of short, sharp, condensed tournament where they can just suddenly win a couple of games and they've won it. With this, you know, are they going to win enough of those 9 group stage matches to get to the semi-finals? If they do, they would have a very good chance of winning it, because on their day they can beat anybody. But I don't know that they're going to get out of the group.
And that's a beauty of the tournament. I think, you know, I think England will steamroll the group, but you know, they're just the way things are shape, you know, shape up. You know, most teams can beat most teams on their day.
You're right. You're trying to put your sunglasses.
Get my sunglasses back on here. Hang on.
It's like watching a child learning to dress himself.
Sand everywhere. But yeah, I don't have Pakistan in my final four.
Mm. Well, you mentioned as one of your other 3 favourites for the tournament, you mentioned Australia. Be interested to know why you've got them rated so highly. They are obviously the defending champions. And actually, what they've won 4 of the last 5 World Cups. But, you know, that's the sort of stat that, I don't know, like, is the fact they won the World Cup in 1999 going to be that relevant here? Not necessarily. But, you know, they obviously have an incredible record in World Cups. But for me, they wouldn't be amongst the sort of really fancied sides this time. They've had a fairly wretched time of it over the last few years, although results have picked up recently. But why have you got them down as one of your favourites?
I just think they're, you know, in terms of balance, when you compare them to some of the other sides, you know, I think they'll be in the mix.
Smith and Warner coming
back.
That's
it. You know, yeah. Particularly the reintroduction of Warner, who had a fantastic IPL, scored, you know, was the top run scorer there. You know, who knows? Yeah, obviously, they're going to get a lot of stick, Smith and Warner, but Warner, you know, an angry Warner is quite a scary prospect, I think, for any team.
For anyone.
You throw in Glenn Maxwell, who seems to be sort of moving to the front of the queue in terms of, like, you know, your kind of respected you know, big hitters in that Australian squad. So, yeah, he'll be dangerous. And then with the ball as well, Mitchell Starc was, I think, player of the tournament last, you know, 4 years ago, still there and thereabouts. So,
well, he's not played a lot of ODI cricket since then because of injuries, and when he has, he's not been as effective as that. But yes, certainly in 2015, he was, what, he took his wickets at average of 10 or something. He was ridiculous in that tournament. So
it'll be, I mean, you know, it's going to be interesting to see the Smith and Warner effect.
It's going to be spicy. It's going to be spicy with the England crowds for sure.
But I know, I just feel my gut says Australia to make the semis.
We'll move on, but just one name you haven't mentioned, Usman Khawaja, who's been in tremendous form at the top of the order. But then that's an interesting one, because it's been Khawaja and Finch at the top, and they've actually done really well. They're instrumental in India when Australia won a series in India recently, and that is, you know, they have been in pretty dire form in ODI cricket, but then suddenly they went and won in India, and that's when it felt like maybe the tide was beginning to turn and they'll be feeling much more confident as a result of that series. But Khawaja and Finch have started to establish this partnership at the top. Warner coming back, you know, these are the questions, and it's sort of a bit like the Archer thing. You can't not bring back Warner and Smith, but when you've started to establish a team that's working, how does that affect things, and does it cause problems?
I think you have to, I know, because, you know, Warner would be possibly in my top 3 picks for player of the tournament going into it. I think he's going to have a blinder.
You've said that about 6 players to me, like, off mic. It's getting busier on the beach, Tone.
It's filling up.
We're heading towards sort of after work time, and we're getting more and more curious looks. We probably look pretty cool, do we? A couple of guys with microphones and headphones on and laptops sat on a mat on a beach.
Yeah, trainers on, you know, jeans, jumper.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Shall we talk about New Zealand?
Go on.
Perennial dark horses at global tournaments, aren't they? But are they perhaps not so dark horses this time? You don't have them in your top three.
They're in the tussle. I mean, obviously, there's only there's not that many teams going to miss out. I think you could probably. I'd be surprised, and we'll come on to them. But I'd be surprised if Afghanistan, Sri Lanka, or Bangladesh, mm-hmm. you know, trouble the business end. So for me, you're really looking at a tussle between New Zealand, South Africa, West Indies, and Pakistan for that fourth spot. Mm.
My notes for New Zealand say Williamson, Bolt, Southey. So there you go. Make of that what you will. Although also, the wind's just picked up there. Wow.
Playing a hoolie now.
It is.
Out of nowhere.
Although I guess Guptill would be another name to add to that mix. And Ross Taylor appearing at his fourth World Cup. Do you know, here's a trivia question for you, Tane. Quite a few players have appeared in five World Cups. Two players have appeared in six.
God.
Who are the two? I'll be surprised if you don't get one, but I'll be very impressed if you get the other. Frankly, if you don't get one, you're fired.
Jeez, the pressure's on.
And I do have hiring and firing authority.
You can cut out the pause in the the final edit.
Well, it's been 75 minutes so far. Couple of guys playing frisbee up there. I'm just watching that.
Six,
yeah. Come on, mate. There's one really obvious one.
No, I know, but you're sucking me in here. How obvious?
Like one of the most famous cricketers ever who played Sachin. For a really long time. Sachin Tendulkar. There we go. We got there in the end. The other one, we'll be here literally till next week if I wait for you to try and guess this one. Javed Miandad is the
other
one.
I would have got that.
Would you?
Yeah.
Would you now? Shall we move on to South Africa? So you mentioned maybe there's going to be a bit of a scrap between some of these sorts of teams we're talking about now for those other qualification spots potentially. South Africa would probably be one of those. They've got a pretty fearsome looking pace attack. Dale Steyn coming back and seems like he's maybe, you know, properly fit again, which is exciting. Rabada and Gidi as well. One thing about South Africa is they do have something of an aging squad. So, I mean, there are certainly plenty of young players in there, like Rabada and Ngidi, but some of the sort of household names are really starting to get on a bit. So Steyn is 35, Du Plessis is 34, which, as we know, Tone, is really old.
Yeah, ancient.
And Imran Tahir is 40. And then there's Hashim Amla as well, 36. Now, he's back in the squad. He was dropped for a bit, but they have picked him. I mean, it would have been a brave call not to take him, but he has struggled for form in all formats over the last year or so. I think he's averaging 28 in ODIs over the last 12 months. And you just feel like they need him to get back to form because the batting does look a little bit light for me without him. Given that we're anticipating this tournament to be seeing sort of 340, 350 totals as the norm, Amla not necessarily the sort of first name you'd think of at scoring at that kind of rate, but just the volume of runs, they're going to need a bit more than they've got if without him, I would say.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, in de Kock, they've obviously got, you know, a player who can, you know, he deserves to be talked about the same kind of sentences as you know, the leading names for England and whatnot. But no, I agree with you. I think they're just a bit light on power. But again, you know, if they get through to the semis and Rabada cleans up in the semi final, you know, who knows? That could go any way.
Well, I mean, virtually every team in this tournament has got one, two, three players. You know, it's got a number of players that can just turn in like an individual performance that completely turns the game on its head. It's a bit more difficult in 50 over cricket to do that than it is in say 20 over cricket. And you do need more of a team performance, but if South Africa are in the semi-final, then, you know, it could be someone like David Miller just turns it on. He's very capable of doing that, scoring, you know, 80, 90, 100 in no time.
And so, you know, South Africa had England 20 for 6 at Lord's
absolutely
a couple of years ago.
They're certainly in the mix, but for me, they wouldn't be in the top bracket of favourites. And I, you know, we'll get on to our predictions, but I wouldn't be putting them in my semi-final lineup. This is having said that, I always predict South Africa to win global tournaments, and they never do. They never have. So now I've said that, they probably will win it. One team that I do quite fancy is West Indies. Not so long ago, they were in a desperate rut in ODI cricket, and of course they had to come through the qualifier to even make this World Cup. But all of a sudden, things seem to be looking up. We obviously watched a lot of West Indies 2 or 3 months ago, and they got closer than anyone really to beating England. As I say, England haven't lost a bilateral ODI series for a few years. Well, they did draw in the West Indies. That was a 2-2 draw, wasn't it? Gale's back, Tone. He can't run, but he can certainly whack it a long way. Are you excited to watch him at this tournament?
Yeah, 100%.
Universe boss.
I like West Indies too. I won't give it away as to whether I've put them in my top four. But what's going on up there?
Is that lorry on fire?
It does look like it.
Do we need to go and...
It's absolutely spewing out smoke.
Do we need to go and sort that out? Should we call the fire brigade?
The sight of a flaming lorry driving along the coast road is quite scary. But
I mean, it is dry. It's not stationary. It is just bombing along. I assume it's fine. It looks like a steam engine.
Yeah, that's mental. Anyway, back to the West Indies. Yeah, no, I like the West Indies.
Gale, you're
the return of Gale. The return of Andre Russell as well, who again, you know, had a belting IPL. I think he's only played one ODI though since 2015. Yeah, so he's been out. You know, been out in the cold for quite a while. But you know, he's obviously a player who, if West Indies can get into the right situation, you know, I don't know whether Russell's the kind of player who's going to score 180. I don't know whether he's in that bracket. But certainly, if West Indies get to a position where they need, you know, 90 to win off, 90 yeah. to win off like 5 or 6 overs, and Russell was at the crease, you'd probably say, you know, they've got a good chance. So I like them.
Shimron Hetmeyer as well. I'm excited to watch about one of my favourite cricketers.
Shea Hope as well.
Shea Hope. Evan Lewis, who was injured for that series against England, is back and is another very exciting person.
So Ashley Nurse.
They've certainly got the batting. I quite like Ashley Nurse.
I do
actually,
like Ashley Nurse.
He does a job. He's not a, you know... He's not a box office cricketer, but he does a job. He can bat as well.
And clearly, you know, with the West Indies compared to the last few years, you know, there is a sense that there is optimism returning. There's a good spirit there. They can be very dangerous.
Yeah, there's a bit of team unity there now, which there perhaps wasn't before. I mean, the bowling perhaps not as eye-catching. But having said that, I mean, still Roach and Gabriel, neither of whom played a part, or did Roach play one game maybe in that England series? But there's certainly going to be some pace there, and obviously we saw Sheldon Cottrell come in to tremendous effect in that series too. How many salutes do you think we might see over the next few weeks? Probably a few, I'd imagine. Yeah, I'm excited to watch West Indies, and I do fancy them to go far. Well, we've got three teams left, and three teams that, as you've said already, and at the risk of ending up with egg on our faces, I don't think have much of a chance of winning the tournament or even making the semi-finals. All capable of springing a surprise, all capable of beating most teams, beating anyone potentially on their day, but you know, you'd imagine going to be difficult for any of them to get out of the group. Let's maybe talk about Sri Lanka first. Sri Lanka usually there or thereabouts in World Cups, but they've had a terrible time of it in ODI cricket over the last few years. I think this is right. They haven't won a bilateral series against any of the teams at this tournament. So they have beaten Scotland and they've beaten Ireland, but anyone that they're going to be playing against, they haven't won a series against them for 3.5 years. I think it's the winter of 2015-2016 when they beat West Indies as the last bilateral ODI series they won, which is pretty remarkable, really. Over the winter just gone, they lost 11 out of 12 ODIs against England, New Zealand and South Africa. And they're perhaps, unsurprisingly, given that form, had a bit of a panicked selection for this tournament. They dropped 5 established players and changed their captain coming in here. Karuna Ratna, who's the test captain, has been made ODI captain as well. So perhaps just a little bit short of quality, Tone. And I have to say, it wouldn't surprise me if they finish 9th or even 10th.
I'm probably with you on that. Yeah, you know, they're obviously some way away from... from the great Sri Lankan sides, which were, you know, full of genuine world-class players.
Sorry, I just took a sip of water from my
gulp.
From my water bottle, and it's the nozzle was absolutely covered in sand.
You know, which is a shame for Sri Lanka. But then again, you say they've got nine games here. You know, at the risk of sounding patronising, that's a great experience for some of those younger players. And you know, who know? You know, I'll be honest, I don't know a lot about some of the players in that team, but. Yeah, chance to. Oh, I'm sounding a bit like Alan Shearer now. Yeah, it's like, yeah.
Lassith, yeah. Malinga, who's that?
But you know, like Tassara Pereira has produced the goods in the last you know, the last year or two. So they, yeah, they have got a bit of shape to them. Karina Ratner as well.
It's not how you pronounce it, but yes.
How do you say it?
Karina Ratner. Karina Ratner. Sounding like Mark Lawrenson now.
Yeah. Karina Ratner.
Karina Ratner.
Karina Ratner. Oh, yeah. And Karina Ratner as well.
I'm not going to edit any of that
out. Oh, for God's sake. Yeah, but I mean, they're going to, you know, talk about Tassara Pereira, but they're going to need a sort of Kusal Pereira performance nine times, aren't they, probably, to get out this.
Is he in the squad?
Yes.
Okay. So he'll be exciting to watch. I mean, they obviously do have some very good players. Angelo Matthews as well, Malinga, I mentioned, Kusal Mendes. Like, this is not, it's not a bad team on paper, but they just haven't been able to string it together. And you would just say, compared to most of the other teams, while they've got a lot of good players, they don't have as many good players, or the good players they have are not as good. This is a pretty cutting
back
edge.
Back to basics punditry, isn't it?
Really high-level punditry. All right, two teams to go. Bangladesh. Bangladesh had a good tournament in 2015. You probably remember saying that we talk about England's dismal moment there, but it was Bangladesh who beat them to knock them out and qualify for the quarterfinals in that tournament. And they've certainly got it in them to have another very good tournament. You know, they're no longer just kind of making up the numbers at these global events. And, you know, they will fancy themselves to do something here and potentially even to get out of this group. It's going to be difficult, but they won't see it as impossible. And actually, we talk about West Indies being a strong shout, you know, having a chance of winning this tournament. Well, Bangladesh just beat them three times in Ireland and beat them in the final of that tri-series with Ireland. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it would probably be wrong to write Bangladesh off completely. And they do have some of the most exciting cricketers in the world in their ranks, in Shakib obviously, and certainly Mustafiza Rahman is one of my favorite players, so yeah, I mean, I'm sort of talking myself into giving them more of a chance than I was expecting to.
Sounds like it. And to give you a couple of other names as well, you know, they've got the experience there. You know, Tamim Iqbal has seen it all. Sarkar as well, you know, player who's performed well over the last couple of years. Yeah, I really like Bangladesh as a team, and I would love to see them do well.
Not to bring it down, but obviously they had a very tough experience in New Zealand a few months ago, and you know, very traumatizing events there when they were very nearly caught up in the terrorist attack on the mosque in Christchurch. From what I've read, that has been a very traumatizing event, and a lot of the players have found it very difficult to cope after they went back home. So what effect that might be having on them sort of psychologically and personally and everything, and whether this World Cup is coming at the wrong moment perhaps, but certainly like
could go either way though, couldn't it? I mean, you know, once they get into the team environment and you know, have got that clear focus of a tournament to play, it might bring the best out of them.
Yeah, it could be an inspiring thing,
or an outlet
so we'll see, but they'll be exciting to watch, there's no doubt about that. Speaking of exciting to watch, Afghanistan are the last team, the one team we haven't talked about. How much are you looking forward to watching Rashid Khan at this tournament?
Well, yeah, by this point, if he's not the foremost limited overs bowler in the world, he's not far off, which is an astonishing rise. I mean, it's almost as astonishing as, you know, Afghanistan's rise, really, in terms of sort of speed and
he sort of personifies the achievement of the whole team.
Going to be really excited to see them. I mean, it is, I guess, for Afghanistan now, their second appearance at a World Cup, you know, they'll be wanting to talk about, you know, to focus on now moving on from just being the amazing story. But it is, you know, it's still does bear repeating just how remarkable it is that Afghanistan are here, you know, and regardless of the format or whatever, you know, they're at this World Cup on merit for sure. And
the most remarkable thing about it is that Afghanistan are here and it doesn't seem that remarkable.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
That it's almost like routine that there are these tournaments because as you say, it is a bit of a cliche, or it's at least very well trodden ground, you know, to keep talking about what an amazing story it is, what an inspiring story it is. But it is, and it is worth reflecting on occasionally, because 15 years ago they were playing British forces teams, like the Afghanistan national team was playing British armed forces teams, and that was their level. And now they're here at the World Cup, and you wouldn't put it past them to beat anybody, to beat England, to beat India, potentially, if they have a day where they play out of their skin.
And, well, yeah, and just over 10 years ago, they were playing in Jersey in World Cricket League Division 5. And, you know, 2008, that, you know, not long after the war and, you know, everything that brought. I mean, you know, it's kind of remarkable to think that a cricket team kind of came out of that just a few years later and was playing, you know, was playing cricket in a place like where we are now, which just seems a million miles away from that situation. To get to that point even was pretty remarkable. But then from there to become a team that are quite like rightly in the conversation at the top level of world cricket and producing players who are, you know, Rashid Khan, you might be in your sort of your composite 11 of the tournament going into it.
Potentially. I haven't done one of those.
Come on. But yeah, it's remarkable and you know, it can't be said enough how awesome it is to see.
I missed a trick there. Last night I was watching television with my girlfriend. I should have been
wasting
drawing,
time.
Should have been drawing up a composite 11. In terms of how they're going to fare on the pitch, another team that's rather impulsively changed their captain right on the eve of the tournament, Gulbuddin Naib, has now taken over. So could that be a destabilizing thing? You know, remains to be seen. And they might find the conditions difficult. And this is probably something that applies to Bangladesh as well. Afghanistan do rely very heavily on their spinners, Rashid Khan, but also Mohammad Nabi and a couple of others. If this World Cup was on the subcontinent, you'd actually give them a decent shout of, you know, causing some upsets and doing quite well. I think they will find it more difficult in England, you know, assuming that we have the conditions that we're expecting. That's going to be a real challenge for them. But I'm looking forward to watching them play, and I think they will give teams a run for their money.
And, you know, again, to come back to it, we obviously started this on a bit of a downer, talking about the format, but, you know, it's going to be nice to see, you know, we don't get the opportunity, and, you know, English cricket fans, you know, might not necessarily be watching, and you know, I haven't seen a huge amount of Afghanistan's matches going into this, but the chance to see them play 9 matches and face every team, you know, at that top table is going to be it's going to be really cool.
And they're sort of flying the flag for, I don't want to say associate cricket because they're a full member now, they're not an associate team, but with the, you know, the controversy around the 10 team thing, they're sort of, you know, if Afghanistan can do well here and win a couple of matches and play competitive cricket, it will in a way be one in the eye for the ICC and will kind of hint at the fact that perhaps if Ireland were there as well and Scotland were there as well and Nepal and all these other teams, that it would have been a better tournament. So which it would have been. So I imagine, you know, sort of Irish fans will be supporting Afghanistan as well. Okay, so after all of that then, Tone, where's your money? I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to press you on this, for a semi-final lineup, 2 finalists and a winner.
In that order?
Yeah.
Semi-final lineup.
There's so much sand in this bottle. I've got to not put it on the sand.
It's like a space-age nozzle you've got there. I'm surprised it doesn't like self-clean the sand out.
It's a vacuum-sealed bottle, this.
I don't even know what that means.
No, I don't know what it means. I made
mist
it up.
Mist and sip.
It's insulated.
Right.
So it's supposed to keep it, you know, a constant temperature. But it's just getting so much sand in here. It's awful.
Just stand it upright.
Yeah.
Putting it in that hole just wasn't a good idea. Okay, semi-final lineup: England, India, Australia, West Indies.
Okay. Shall I give you mine?
Yeah.
Similar to that. England, India, New Zealand, West Indies.
Okay.
Fine.
Final. I'm going to go. I just. don't know what I'm going to do.
Why am I letting you go first? Because we're both going to say the same thing.
Well, no, I think I'm going to go India to win the tournament.
Wow. Is that sort of, is that insurance? Is that like emotional insurance for you?
Because at least I'll have got it right on this. Yeah, exactly, kind of. I mean, I don't know.
Because if you're wrong and England win it, you'll be happy.
Yeah.
But if England don't win it, you'll be happy. Even if India don't win it, you'll be like, well, I didn't say England were going to win it.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know. It's just hard, isn't it? You can't. England are obviously the outstanding team.
Yeah.
But yeah, who knows between two semi-finals and a final, what the hell is going to happen? So yeah, I'm going to go India just on sort of weight of kind of internal confidence. I think England might have a crisis of confidence at the key moment.
So you're going for an India-England final?
Yeah.
See, I want to go for a... I'll do it. I'll say England-India final, but England to win.
Okay. Well, I mean... It is tough, isn't it? Say you divided these 10 teams into four groups of four. If you divided these teams up and you had they're only playing two or three group matches, pool matches into quarterfinals, you could make a stronger case. But surely something spectacular would have to go wrong for England and India not to make the semis.
Yeah,
and at which point, yeah, they'll get through, I think.
Well, it's going to be fascinating. That's for sure. It's going to be a fascinating, if somewhat long, 6 or 7 weeks. And we're going to be right across it all here on the World Cricket Show. What's our schedule for the World Cup, Tone?
We're going to be recording every Wednesday, and you're going to get it up on the day?
I'm going to do my best to get it up on the day.
Yeah. I mean, just do it almost as... You could just pop it.
If you could cut out some of your blue humour and bonkers political opinions so that I don't have to do so much editing... Sort of self-editing rather than me having to edit it out. That would
make
help.
Your life easier.
That would help.
So we're going to record every Wednesday throughout the tournament. Hopefully have it up if Adam pulls his finger out each Wednesday evening.
Yeah, it'll either be Wednesday evening or sometime on Thursday.
With a recap of obviously what's happened over the course of the week, and our usual mix of light-hearted banter and punditry.
World-class humour and insight. Which is one of our iTunes reviews that my mum wrote. Things might start to get a little bit tricky around the sort of semi-finals, final time.
Yeah, I'm off to the island. No, I'm joking.
Well, I was going to say, one of the problems. You're off to the island games with work. But also, I am having a baby.
Congratulations.
Thanks very much. This is the first you're hearing.
I can't believe you've sprung that on me now.
I'm actually off to an NCT class after this. But yeah, having a baby in mid-July, like pretty much the due date is more or less the World Cup final. So,
and it's a boy.
It's a boy, yeah.
Will it be Owen if England win?
Yeah, true, actually. Oh, well, I was planning a few...
Jofra.
Jofra, not Joffrey. Yeah. Jofra. A few people have said to me, you going to have to name it after a cricketer? So I think what I'm planning at the moment is... Atherton, Gough, Flintoff, Hoggard, Bayfield.
I like that.
How's that sound?
Yeah, Athers.
Yeah.
Athers, Bayfield. Athers, quite a strong name.
Post-Atherton, Bayfield.
Yeah.
Having a baby in July, which is going to make the podcast... Well, I mean, obviously we are going to...
Get your priorities straight.
We obviously are going to record a podcast after the World Cup final. But I just don't know...
You might be breastfeeding
exactly
at the time.
Well, exactly. I literally might be on the labour ward during the World Cup final, so we'll see what happens. But
we'll make sure your SkyGo account is topped up.
Yeah, Elena's very excited about this. It should work out cool. I mean, it's a bit of a shame in a way that it's this way round. You know, I'm not having the baby before a winter Ashes tour because, you know, I'd be excited about those late night feeds and stuff. But might have a couple of weeks of paternity leave during the Ashes if the baby comes. The baby's got to come a bit late, which Elena doesn't seem to be on board with. But if it comes a week or so late, then I should time my paternity leave spot on for the Ashes.
These are the things you need to be thinking about, and Elena has to be thinking about as well. You know, forget everything else, just focus on the cricket.
Well, anyway, there's some way to go before that. So yeah, there'll be plenty of podcasts throughout the World Cup before we get to July.
It's remarkable, isn't it, if you'd have sort of played this section of the podcast to us sort of 10 years ago, it was like the 2019 World Cup, you're having a baby during it. It's mental.
Yeah.
It's like something from the future.
It is. It's like that episode of The Simpsons where Lisa sees the future and she's the president and Bart's the dropout loser. And that's kind of like me and you.
Well, and probably actually, to be fair, the thing we'd be most excited about is that we're recording it on the beach. We'd be like, wow, what like magic technology has allowed this to happen?
Yeah.
Like, forget the baby. Forget, you know.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's an exciting future we're living in.
It is.
Well, one of the exciting things about the future is that, you know, there's social media and you can get involved on the World Cricket Show social media accounts. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/cricketshow. Tony's got his phone out already. Are you following us on Facebook? Is that what you're
making sure?
Making notes of these handles. We're on Twitter as well, at Cricket Show. Tony's at Tony Cover. I'm at Adam Bayford 12. We're on Instagram at World Cricket Show. If you want to send us an email with some thoughts about the tournament, it's worldcricketshow@gmail.com. And if you'd like to support the show, there's a couple of ways to do that. The free way is to write a review on iTunes, or should I say Apple Podcasts, or whatever podcast platform you use, because that really does help to push us up the rankings and bring new people to the show. The not so free way is to support us with your cash on Patreon, patreon.com/cricketshow. Help to keep us in business.
Now, long-time listeners amongst you will know that traditionally a World Cup or a World T20 or a T20 World Cup, as it's going to be known, would offer me the chance to defy the odds and prove that I actually have the better cricket knowledge than Adam with a in the fantasy game, which I've been able to do every single time since we started the podcast.
Not sure about that.
But
not sure the facts would bear that out.
Well, just have a look. Have a look. But, you know, sadly, at this point, with 8 days to go until the start of the tournament, the ICC has not pulled its finger out. There's seemingly no official fantasy game, which is a bit disappointing for us.
It's very disappointing.
And it doesn't seem like there's any noise. I actually emailed them, in my keenness, emailed the ICC a couple of months ago. Never heard back. Didn't even acknowledge my email.
But you're a blue tick, Tony. I know. Maybe you should have tweeted at them.
But, you know, having scoured Twitter as well, there's not even any mention of it there. So we may be calling a snap general fantasy cricket game in the next week, possibly using the Telegraph version.
Well, is that the only option we've got at the moment, we think?
I think it looks like it. There are a couple of, I don't know. But the Telegraph, what the pitfalls are, I think it's only available to UK credit card holders. And that gives you a clue. It costs you £3.
Right.
But there is a prize, I guess, an actual prize, not just a mug. From us.
So yes, at the moment the Telegraph one looks like our only option, which I know will be very disappointing news to our Australian listeners, American listeners, etc., etc. But fingers crossed the ICC do just suddenly turn round over the next week and unveil a fantasy league game. Tony's just cleaning the sand off his laptop with his toe, which is also covered in sand, so I'm not sure that's super helpful.
I mean, in the spirit of this World Cup, yeah, they probably will reveal it on the eve of it.
It's possible, and it would seem very strange if they don't have one, because as you say, they have had them at the last, well, at all the previous global events recently, and this is the World Cup. Like, they did it for the Champions Trophy, why would they not do it for the World Cup? So it is possible, and if it does happen, we obviously will set up a game and get involved. But we're planning to do either a podcast or a Facebook Live next Wednesday with some sort of last minute thoughts on the tournament, so at that point we will know what the situation is. So keep your eyes on that, and we'll obviously put it out on social media as well.
But yeah, basically just keep your eyes peeled. At Cricket Show on Twitter, we'll keep you, what's the word,
updated.
Exactly, that's where you're going to get all the breaking fantasy news.
One very last thing to say, Tane, that we haven't mentioned is that you're actually going to a couple of games in this World Cup, aren't you?
Yeah, I've stolen your tickets.
Yeah,
well, we were going to go together, but then you had this baby thing.
Yeah,
so you're out. So myself and the London correspondent Gordon McRae are going to West Indies, South Africa, courtesy of you, although I've paid you for the tickets.
Yeah.
At Southampton.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm also going to the England Australia game at Lord's, which will be tasty.
Yeah, that's massive that you've got tickets for that. So can you give us some sort of live reporting from the ground as well?
Try. Live beer snake updates.
Brilliant. There's a huge amount to look forward to over the next couple of months.
Can we just... I know you want to go on with things to have a swim.
Well, it's not that. It's that my behind is absolutely soaking wet from sitting on this mat for like an hour and a half.
Let this podcast... I know it's our World Cup preview, but can we just briefly mention the glorious launch of the 100?
Yeah, go on.
People probably almost certainly saw it, but the ECB or whoever was behind the marketing of the 100, yeah, sort of pulled the trigger, launched a very basic website and sort of registration for tickets, and alongside that, the logo. Underwhelming would be a generous description of how it went down.
Yeah,
just astonishing. Why announce it 3 weeks before the World Cup, whatever it was?
Bizarre.
For one,
bizarre
in
timing.
England, but meant like genuinely bonkers.
Yeah,
and with that, they announced it. It was the most, possibly the most low key announcement of anything I've ever seen. Yeah. Like restaurants opening Guernsey with more fanfare than that. It's actually insane. And you know, obviously, you know, there was lots of chat about the content that was on the website, the photos, you know, that were taken from gigs in America.
Stock images, yeah.
Yeah. But I just think just the whole thing was just very, very peculiar.
I mean, that stock image thing, like, in some ways has been overdone. And I know, like, the ECB kind of bridled a bit at the fact that people kept bringing it up. For anyone who's not seen, it's that one of the sort of key marketing images turned out is like the first result on Google Images if you just put in audience or something like that. And they just, you know, the response to a journalist asking about that was, look, it's just an image on a website, which it isn't. I mean, what is marketing if it's not that? But also, the stupid thing about it is that their whole pitch for this tournament is that we want to get in a new type of fan. We want to bring in mums and kids. That was the Strauss-Harrison thing right from the beginning. And that picture is all men. And, like, that is just incredibly incompetent marketing. And they're spending hundreds of thousands of pounds on this. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, very odd. So it'll be interesting. I think they've penciled in the live draft, which, but going on this, will be like, you know, it'd be like when we pulled our teams for the IPL out of a hat, you know, yeah. Be a few pieces of paper and a bit of Tupperware.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to be October live on Sky Sports. So that'll be interesting.
I mean, if you get the gig hosting, are you going to change your tune on this tournament?
Almost certainly, but it will be Felix White, I'm sure. So I've just given up. There's no point in even trying now to forge a career in anything.
Felix White is...
Felix White will be doing it. but anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, plenty more on that in due course.
Exactly. We'll come back to that. But let's focus on the World Cup over the next few weeks. Right. That is it. I've enjoyed doing this on the beach, though. I'm glad the tide was going out. Did we check that before? It has gone out.
It's gone quite a long way.
It's because we could sort of pitch camp right by the tide line. So.
No, it's been a revelation. I think we'll be doing this more often, would be my prediction.
Hopefully the background noise wasn't too annoying for people. Let us know. All right. Thanks, Tone.
Cheers.
We're going to go for a swim now. See you guys soon. Bye-bye for now.
Great. I can smell your fear. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba. Ba da da ba ba, ba da da ba ba.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.